Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, there's nothing like coming across a book that catches your attention just based on the title, let alone the content. So it's a real pleasure. Charlie Shepherd, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Great.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Likewise, let me give a brief introduction. Charlie is based in San Francisco Bay Area, and he's the founder and CEO of Shepherd Partners, which is a company on the forefront unleashing the full potential of people and teams through superior training and consulting methodologies. He's an internationally recognized leader in executive and team development, as well as a professor at Holt International Business School, and Charlie's courses and trainings have been delivered around the world. He also happens to be the founder and CEO of KnowNow, a pioneering e-learning and social networking platform. It's a tool to accelerate both learning and measurement of the transfer of knowledge in an organization. In fact, KnowNow is pioneering the field of knowledge as a service, that'd be KAAS, creating for organizations a true competitive advantage. Our topic today is his new book that was released in April called Save Your Drama for Your Mama. It's a practical guide for eliminating drama from our organizations, our teams, and our lives. So, you know, Charlie, with this world of reality TV, though, aren't you swimming upstream? Because it seems like we like to watch drama.
Well, I actually ask this question of audiences, and I'll have people show their hands, and I'll say, how many of you know who Norman Borlaug is? And I'll look out at a sea of people, and nobody will raise their hand. And then I'll ask the question, how many of you know who Lindsay Lohan is? And everybody raises their hands. And so you're right. Drama sells people magazines. And it sells, you know, cable TV shows. And so we are drawn into this kind of swirl of drama as entertainment. And I guess it's a little escape when it's far away. But the problem when drama comes into your own life, It's not a lot of fun because it takes energy. There's nothing entertaining about it. And by the way, Norman Borlaug is somebody who actually saved over 1 billion lives. So he was the gentleman that invented a new kind of wheat. And so people don't understand and know people who have won the Nobel Peace Prize, but we all know who Lindsay Lohan is. And I think that gets to there is an entertainment value of drama. It's just not fun in our organizations, in our families, or in our lives.
And actually, how much of a crippling effect it has, and not until you step away the drama do you realize what a ridiculous, surreal situation I allowed to perpetrate, even.
Yeah. And here's the thing. A lot of times, the drama patterns are actually unconscious, and we're unaware of them. And they all come as standard equipment for every human being. I mean, we are actually, as a species on the planet, we're the most dependent species in infancy of any animal on this earth. So we're longer in support from our parents than any other animal. And so what that does is, before the higher cognitive centers have come online, we have actually learned almost innately that for our very survival, we have to be dependent upon external resources. And so what happens is the drama patterns are, and we teach our courses and our seminars all around the world, the drama pattern shows up in every single culture and every single environment. And if people think they never allow drama into their life, that's called low self-awareness.
That's exactly right, yeah, I would say.
And so it's not a matter of whether you have drama or not. You pretty much... there's drama in everybody's life. It's a matter of being aware of it and really actually being able to choose. And when you make the choice to no longer have that, you start to control the effects of the drama. And, you know, by my definition, it's something that actually takes energy out of the environment versus generating energy.
Yeah, that's really, really true. I've, of course, the kind of work you do and I do is very similar. We go in and help organizations not just move, but leapfrog, jump, fly to the next level. And when you get too close to the situation sometimes, at least I've found that I found myself getting swept up into the drama. And you're saying, wait a minute, you know, let's call it for what it is first. And it's how do you remove yourself from it, maintain an objectivity, and then try to assist. And that is probably the biggest challenge for people inside organizations or those of us that, you know, are so dedicated to helping people get out of drama is how do you spot it at the onset?
Well, and here's the thing. I remember I was doing an executive MBA program at Rutgers University and in Kansas City. And it was a two-week program that was all on leadership that we were doing. And it was probably the most advanced stuff I had put together with my colleagues on leadership. I was really excited about the material. And afterwards, we were really pleased with what we'd created. But we started to really analyze in the participants the impact that we had. And the people that needed the leadership development the most embrace the concepts the least.
The least, exactly, yeah.
And the people that needed it the least actually embrace the concepts the most. And that's what really had me start looking at, okay, so what is the pattern that's keeping people from actually being the architects of their own life, leading so that they can lead teams authentically and they can lead organizations authentically? And it was really this, the patterns of drama that was getting in the way. And so that became pretty much our methodology for accelerating, creating cultures of leadership, and for us to actually help organizations create cultures where leaders show up everywhere, we first had to be really explicit about eliminating drama. So we built an archetype of how to do that quickly, and in fact, you know, we can do it empirically now. So we know that we've crafted and architected enough methodologies that we can help organizations eliminate the drama out of their organization, and then leadership starts to happen, and you can have actually an explosion of leadership.
But I think we should probably slow down a bit here and clarify, because I so enjoyed reading your book. For those of you just tuned in, we're speaking with Charlie Shepherd. His book is called Save Your Drama for Your Mama. In fact, you can learn more about it by going to www.saveyourdrama.com. And that is... Charlie, that you make it very clear, though, that this is not an externally beholden situation. You got to start right with internal work to be able to spot it, manage it, and then, you know, take ownership of yourself. This that accountability piece. It isn't just what's done to you or the television set you walk onto.
Yeah, no, it starts with your own thinking. It's you know. By my most basic definition of drama is it takes energy out of the environment. And I don't know if you've ever had this as an experience, but I know that I've had people walk into a meeting, watch them go to work, and suck all the life force and energy out of the room.
Absolutely. There's no oxygen. You want to pass out tanks. Absolutely.
And the thing that I get curious about, this is being a behavioral scientist, I go, how did they do that? That's amazing.
And they did it so fast.
Walk in, right? And suck all the life force out, and so I always get curious about how you do that, because if you can absolutely understand how somebody does that, then you can do the opposite. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe that contrast is one of the easiest ways to really generate learning. So if we can understand drama better and the roles and the thinking and the energy that goes into it, and by energy I mean like the kind of state inside of your own body, like resignation is a good entry point for going on into drama. In other words, that you're resigned about doing something, or you have resignation about meeting with this person, or you don't want to go to work today, and all of that feeling actually leads to the drama triangle. And oftentimes it starts with your thinking. And it could be, you know, assuming negative intent about what somebody is doing or what their intentions are, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the drama triangle. And I think the biggest trap of the drama triangle is because we have these iconic roles, whether it's being the adversary or the rescuer or the victim, these kind of iconic archetypal roles that come hardwired with every single person, that when somebody else is in the drama triangle, it's likely to elicit you going into the drama triangle also. Because
as
human beings, we naturally model the environment that's around us.
Well, it's funny you should say this. A lot of this comes down to really basic lack and misunderstandings. I've got a classic because what we're talking about, you know, obviously your book has a strong appeal to those of us that lead in organizations or live in organizations, but this is applies equally in our private lives. The other night, my husband had to get up at 4:30 in the morning, or actually 3:30 in the morning, to be able to get to a flight, and was thunderstorming, fireworks, the whole bit. On the outside, we have a golden retriever that absolutely can't deal with any of that noise. She starts panting and waking up and bumping the bed and so on. So right before Ted knocked off, he and I kind of had a little difficult conversation about something. He fell asleep. About 15 minutes later, the dog comes in, starting to bump the bed, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't want him to wake up Ted, because he's got to get up early. So I grabbed the blanket and went and laid on the couch in the living room with the dog. Well, turns out my husband ends up getting up early, flies over. He leaves the house thinking I was upset with him, and thus, you know, left the bedroom to go sleep with the dog in the living room, when indeed I was doing something as a courtesy for him. And so you could see how this drama thing, though, could start taking off again. Well, it was because we argued, which I really didn't think we did, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that that plays out constantly in organizations, of people coming wired already with an expectation something was going to go wrong. It could, or it might even result in something going wrong.
Yep. Now, it's the three major thinking patterns that lead somebody into the drama triangle are assuming negative intent of someone else. It's actually avoiding all levels of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's having what's called an external locus of control. In other words, the outside world is doing this to me. Which is all of which are mental games that we play that when you really start to examine your own thought process really aren't that accurate or useful. Even if somebody's over there being a jerk, and let's say hypothetically you've gone to the store and somebody's being, in your mind, a jerk, if you label them as such, you know, how useful is that for you?
Mm-hmm.
And people always want to tell me that their perceptions are true, and the very nature of perceptions, I would ask a completely different question, which is, are your perceptions having any utility right now? And if it's useful to label somebody a jerk, if it makes you more resourceful or it makes you stronger, then by all means, label them a jerk. I find that when I'm labeling people with some type of a negative intention, it actually limits my ability to engage with them in a way that's going to help move them out of the drama triangle, for that matter. It could be that somebody else is hooked. And so by me not being hooked in my relationship with them, no dramas occurred. And I give them the best opportunity anyway to get out of whatever stuck place that they're in by shifting my own thinking first, then I can actually start to lead others.
Yes, and in fact, that's the phrase that you've coined so strongly in your teachings, your book, and otherwise, is that leadership is a choice.
Yep.
And with it comes then responsibility, but also on the flip, you know, broader, a feeling of joy, freedom, you know, expression, and just not for you as an individual, but those around you. When you have the opportunity to speak with audiences, like I know you do so frequently, of different cultures, different makeups, diversity, and so on, this whole idea of each one of us being a leader, doesn't that seem to catch people off guard? You know, no, that's the other guy over sitting over there. That's not me.
Yeah, it's the first place. So there is, I think leadership is something that actually comes from a very authentic place, or otherwise you wouldn't be able to lead. I don't think people follow people that are inauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the authenticity of somebody leading that is inspirational to others, because it becomes a map or a model for, I think, what we want for ourselves. So what happens is you first have to learn how to lead yourself, and we all start there. And if you learn how to run your own brain, if you learn how to be a visionary, if you learn how to be a catalyst inside of your own life, if you learn how to give other people feedback and get feedback yourself, and so you've got these capabilities, you can then start to extend that to other individuals. And sometimes you're just leading inside of a church, or you're leading inside of your family.
Mm-hmm.
But fundamentally, everybody's leading their own life. And the better you do that, the more opportunity you have to have a much broader impact. And then you get to start to think about whole systems or organizations. And look, some of the best leaders in the world were in the role of what would be called an individual contributor. You know, and they've created things because they've actually started to make choices. And And I think that that word choice is not always fully appreciated. It can be something as simple as a linguistic shift from I have to go do something to I choose to go do it. And most people don't realize when they have to do something, like say I have to be on this radio show, or I have to go to work, or I have to pay my taxes. As soon as we put the have to word, we're locating the control outside of ourselves. And it's a simple linguistic pattern, but if we just say, no, I'm choosing to be on the radio show, or I'm choosing to go to work, or I'm choosing to pay my taxes. I'm not suggesting that if you choose not to pay the taxes, it's not a very wise choice. and there's consequences to making that choice. It's just that you're going to get a different energy by actually choosing. You know, I've been married. It'll be coming up next summer for 20 years. But if I made a choice 20 years ago, and so if I have to be married, because I made a choice 20 years ago, that's not going to be a very good marriage.
Right.
You know, instead of choosing to be married today, is going to have me be present to that commitment, to the choice, and it fundamentally alters everything. And so very simple language patterns that are not that simple, because they actually create different types of choices inside of your own head, which then creates a different type of energy as you start leading inside of your own life. So encircling back to your original statement, it doesn't take much for people to start to become inspired in leading their own life. They do need to sometimes get a little bit of a kickstart, though.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And in particular, that kickstart, but also being mindful of anyone else around you to support you in the times you might slide back, right? I mean, that's the human condition, is to second guess ourselves. So how can we create some buffers and others that'll keep reminding us, or the tips and tricks to manage ourselves in the process?
Yeah, well, it's probably the best way to stay out of what I call the drama triangle and all the patterns that are associated with it is actually to be an active student of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you learn how to really embrace this whole concept of leadership, because at that point in time, you're never done. You can always learn something more about leadership. And again, if you start to really understand how to lead your own life, and this is developing the skill set of being visionary. You know, people think that visionaries are born that way, and I'll accept the premise that some people have some more innate capabilities, and yet still choosing to develop the capacity to be able to see into the future, speak it into existence, have compelling visions for yourself and for others, and a skill set that can get trained and developed. And then, you know, going into action and learning how to make good decisions and making the wisest choices given the facts that you've got available to you.
Gotcha.
All of these things are absolutely learnable. And the great thing is it generates a different type of energy around you quite authentically that keeps you from actually getting stuck in the drama.
And thus also helping others hook on to you and hopefully learn it themselves. We're speaking with Charlie Shepherd. His new book is called Save Your Drama for Your Mama. Charlie, I'd like you to share with the audience, too, that you've got an internet connection with a special code here on the inside cover to get to achoice.com. So an absolute multi-rater tool.
It was part of this is, I don't know about you, but I've read a lot of business books, and I didn't want to write the book that was the one idea beat to death.
Right.
And I didn't want to write the book that was going to tell you all the great things that if you only came and hired me as a consultant book. I actually wanted to put as much value as I possibly could into a book. And so there was this idea that I had from a brainstorming standpoint. And we were sitting around with actually my consultants, and we were kind of going, how could we create something that really added a lot of value? And so, number one, every copy of the book allows you to go online, and it allows you to survey yourself around the dimensions of drama and leadership. And you'll get out of that a 21-page development report that really lets you kind of look at your own patterns. And then you can invite up to 20 other individuals to survey you. There's no comments, so it's a very safe multi-rater. And yet you can compare yourself to how other people perceive you. The other thing it does, though, is it introduces them to the same idea. I think one of the best things an organization can do is kind of name the patterns of drama. It won't happen as frequently if everybody has more awareness of these kind of ideas and concepts. So the other thing that by inviting up to 20 people to survey you, you've actually introduced them to the idea for themselves. So there's a social aspect by engaging with as many people as possible and having them give you feedback. And you should get insights of where a potential blind spot could be. Look, I wrote the tool. I took to my own survey. I asked for feedback, and it did highlight the areas. You know, I have a tendency to rescue. And so the tool came back, and it not only did it show up that I'm more in the rescuer camp, and it also gave me feedback that that's how my colleagues viewed me also. And so it gave me an area where, okay, this is something, even though I'm aware of it, I can continue to develop myself and growing my own leadership ability.
So you might want to clarify for listeners. I've had the benefit of reading your book, of course, but what do you mean by a rescuer when in that part of the drama triangle?
Yeah, that's probably the role. Most people understand an adversary pretty well because it's somebody who's kind of in one-up, one-down relationships. Mm-hmm. And there's really good literature out there about being a victim, which is the outside world is doing it to me, right? And I am powerless to make a change. The rescuer is probably the most subtle role of those individuals that are in the drama triangle. And the rescuer basically doesn't believe in the strengths of other individuals. So we're not talking about rescuer. I was an emergency medical technician. I was on the National Ski Patrol. I like helping people.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not talking about that kind of rescue. It's like if I had feedback to give you and then I withhold it, or I had a conversation that I wanted to have with you and I withheld it because I didn't think that you could handle it. Mm-hmm. The rescuer's often going on into conversations, not believing in other people's strengths. And so they withhold information or they do the work for other individuals because of that. And what happens is it stops growth in organizations, and the rescuer ends up being resentful, but they don't communicate. So it creates another pattern inside of drama.
And boy, how many times we know as parents that careful switch that we have to be careful that we don't flip, and that is to allow our children to learn on how to save themselves, fix their own situation, and not always be there to prevent anything like that being exposed to them, right?
Yeah, and, part of these patterns, and I'm glad that you bring up, the whole idea of children, is because I'm raising my own, and it's interesting, is how do I make sure that I'm helping build their competency to choose? Because kids choose anyway. It's just whether they're going to choose well or not. And so, again, while I wrote this book for a business audience, it definitely applies on the home front, and it definitely can apply in your personal life, because if we expect children to grow up to be leaders, and where they're actually leading their own life, we actually have to help them learn how to make great choices along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything's done by a rule base, if you do this, you get punished. If you do this, you get punished. All you're doing is you're reinforcing the external locus of control. It will kind of keep them more in the patterns of drama. And so by helping children learn how to choose, you end up creating or fostering an environment where we're going to end up having more leaders in the future.
But, back to my opening question to you here in our half an hour, we're speaking again with Charlie Shepherd, and his book is Save Your Drama for Your Mama. You can learn more by going to www.saveyourdrama.com. I started us out on that track of, but we like to watch reality TV and drama shows and so on and so forth. My question would be is, Charlie, that a lot of what you're presenting here really wants to run contrary to some of the social reinforcements that we otherwise have in our society.
Yep.
And so how do we, for example, I just back on the children front, how many times my husband and I have not forced our kids to go do X, Y, Z, and yet others will say, well, they absolutely should be playing soccer 3 days a week, or they should be wanting to get their driver's license at 16. What do you mean they're going to delay till they're 17 on their own choice? So that's the other thing, is the leadership side for each of us as parents or as leaders within the organizations, we have to own that legacy that we're setting up by rescuing too much or being allowed to be victims or whatever.
Yeah, we actually, there's something called an internal-external locus of control. And we've been measuring for the last 50 years students graduating from college. And last year there was the highest level of external locus of control. In other words, the outside world's doing this to me of any graduating class coming out of college, which means there are fewer systems to actually create inherent leaders, which is how come it's so important that leadership curriculum actually becomes a part of whether it's an organization or even in school environments. How do we generate more leaders? Because the systems or what's happening in society isn't. I mean, I have an 8-year-old son that is reading my great-grandfather's autobiography, and in it he talked about how he had his uncle's Civil War musket hunting squirrels at 8.
Right.
And of course, I'm not giving my son a Civil War musket to go out there and hunt.
Right.
But there's an element when I was reading about it about, okay, there was a self-reliance that was being built in to his environment that we as, parents and educators actually have to think about creating for the next generation.
Very
and
good, right. So, and it's all in line.
If you don't do it, now it's going to need to get done at some point in time. And so, I would encourage people part of the reason why I wrote the book was it was meant to be provocative, hence the title. It was designed to, kind of make people think. It's got experiential activities that are inside of it that all should help someone along whatever their own journey is in developing more leadership inside of their own life, so that they in turn can help others generate more leadership.
Absolutely. Very, very, very well put. Well, Charlie, thank you so much for joining us here today. Again, the book, Save Your Drama for Your Mama. You can go to www.saveyourdrama.com. Thanks for joining us, and have a great bounce on the 4th of July. Take care.
Thank you.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.